Good evening, I'm Michael Carey. Thank you for being with us for Running. We're coming to you on Alaska Public Television and KSKA Anchorage. Tonight we will hear from the candidates for the Alaska Legislature. We will feature candidates in contested races, but you will also hear from candidates running unopposed. Joining me on the panel tonight are Daisha Eaton, South Central reporter for KSKA Radio, and Jill Burke, reporter for the Alaska Dispatch. Now let's meet the candidates in House District 6.
Good evening. My name is Eric Feige. I'm the Republican candidate for House District 6. For the last 2 years, I've been a sitting state legislator representing District 12 and running for re-election, in part to finish what we started over the last 2 years. For those of you that aren't familiar with my background, I graduated from West Point in 1983, served 9 years in the United States Army, culminating with a tour as an instructor at the Academy. After leaving the service, I started flying airplanes for a living, eventually ended up here in Alaska, where I've flown, spent 5 years west of the Alaska Range out in Aniak and Bethel. I started an air taxi business from scratch, and eventually moved to Chicoloon in the year 2000, where I've remained ever since. My wife and I have run a small business. I've flown airplanes all over the state for in all kinds of not only weather but terrain and for various companies. That experience has served me very well as the House Resources co-chairman over the last 2 years. I fundamentally believe that we need to come up with an arrangement where oil companies, if they produce more oil, can pay a lower tax rate. I believe this will boost the Alaska economy. I believe the economy is far more important than revenue to the state of Alaska. I believe we need a natural gas pipeline that runs from the North Slope to Valdez. I believe that's the best way to not only monetize our natural gas resource on the North Slope, but to provide as much benefit to the state as a whole. I'm a strong defender of the Second Amendment. I've received endorsements from both the NRA and the United Fishermen of Alaska. And I believe I'm very well informed on the issues, especially as it pertains to resource development. I look forward to hearing from you on Election Day and hope you vote for me, Eric Feige. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Jamie Duhamel, and I'm a Democrat running for State House in District 6. I am a lifelong Alaskan, raised in a military family, and the proud mother of 4 sons. I've spent my entire life working to improve the futures of families and my local community by helping people who need help to be productive and healthy members of our society. I believe that when families succeed, Alaska succeeds. I ask that you elect me as your next representative because just like you, I believe in common sense development that serves families first over outside interests who care little about our day-to-day lives. From energy development to education to our economy, we need to make smarter choices about what puts food on our table and keeps a roof over our heads. I will develop our natural gas reserves to get that cheap energy source to communities who are suffering from extremely high heating costs. I will make funding education a state priority to give parents more choices and to help keep our talented youth working for our futures right here at home. And I will help develop an agricultural vision for our district and our state that encourages a diverse and robust economic resource while keeping Alaska more independent from imported goods. And finally, I will be your true voice in Juneau. As a representative, I believe that your input, your needs, and your ideas are essential to creating a community that benefits your families first. As a mom and as a community leader, I am a decision maker, a problem solver, and a team player. Let's work together to build a better life for our children, because what is good for families is good for all of Alaska. Please learn more at duhamelforhouse.com and vote Jamie Duhamel for State House in November. Thank you.
I'm Michael Carey. Thank you for joining us for Running. We're coming to you tonight on Alaska Public Television and KSKA Anchorage. Joining me on the panel tonight are Daisha Eaton, South Central reporter for KSKA, and Jill Burke of the Alaska Dispatch. Let's now meet the candidates for Senate seat D, a Valley Senate seat. They are Mike Dunleavy and Linda Menard, the Republican candidates, I should add, in this primary election. We'll start with an opening statement from Mr. Dunleavy.
Thank you. Good day, and thank you for this opportunity. My name is Mike Dunleavy, and I'm running for State Senate seat D in the Mattsu Valley. Education of Alaska's children has been my profession since arriving in this great state decades ago. I began my career as a teacher in the classroom and then moved into various administrative roles, including that of superintendent of schools. I've been married to my wife, Rose, for 24 years, and we have three terrific daughters. Our state funding relies heavily on the flow of oil, which we know is diminishing steadily. This must be addressed. We have little choice. With approximately 90% of Alaska's funding derived from oil, this needs to be the priority in the next legislative session. Unfortunately, key legislation that would have dealt with increasing the flow of oil in the pipeline, as well as construction of a natural gas pipeline, has been stalled in the Senate. In order to solve this issue, the makeup of the Senate must be changed. This includes my opponent, who has confirmed in her campaign ads that she will once again join the same Senate majority that currently runs the Senate. Alaska is facing an uncertain future of diminishing revenues and increasing spending. This is an unsustainable situation that can only be changed if the right people are sent to Juneau, and only you, the voters, can make this happen. With your help, we can get Alaska back on track. Thank you.
Now, Linda Menard, for 1 minute, please.
Thank you. My name is Linda Menard, and I, like so many good Alaskans, came to Alaska in 1968. The United States Air Force brought my husband and I here. And I've been your senator in Wasilla and the Palmer areas for the past 4 years, and a resident of Alaska for nearly 45. 35 years of that time has been spent in the private sector. I was co-owner of the Palmer and Wasilla Dental Center. I've raised 5 children here, and I am a proud homestead person. I do farm agriculture, 55 acres of timothy. I am currently leasing that out. I am running for re-election because I want to continue helping Alaskans move forward by applying my experience in the state and the values I have developed all my lifetime. I stand for the tenets of low taxes, minimal regulations, and personal liberty. I have spent my time in the Senate fighting for these things. At this point in our history, we need experienced people in the Senate, and I bring that.
Okay, we need to wrap it up.
Okay, thank you. I'm sorry.
Thank you very much. That's okay. Now let's go to the journalist questions. Each of the questions will be brief. Response will be 45 seconds from the candidate who is asked, and the other candidate will have 30 seconds to comment on the answer they've heard from their opponent. Let's start with the first question from Jill Burke.
All right, my question is for Mike Dunleavy. You brought up the Senate Bipartisan Coalition, and I'd like to stick on that. It's under attack. I know you've said it's a liberal coalition that must end. I'd like you to talk about that a little bit more, and more specifically, don't Alaskans deserve a legislature that will work cooperatively instead of divisively?
Oh, absolutely. We need a legislature that's going to work cooperatively. They refer to it as a bipartisan coalition, but that's really not true. By meaning two, it's not split evenly. 8 out of the 10 committees are run by Democrats. And as I've said before, Democrats are Democrats. They're fine. They do what Democrats do. The issue is when folks run as Republicans and get elected as Republicans, there's an understanding that they will employ Republican values, Republican approaches. And that's not occurred in this past coalition. And so currently you have 8 out of 10 committees that are run by Democrats, controlled by Democrats. So essentially the Senate is a Democrat-led coalition.
Linda Menard, 30 seconds.
Well, thank you. And I'm insulted if there is any inference that I in any way demeaned my values. And certainly I want everybody to know that I was able to hold the line with a bipartisan, and what are we supposed to do? Each be in a corner when there's 10-10, and there will be nothing but gridlock. And so there was good leadership, I feel, in the Senate. I am Ledge Council Chair, so I have a leadership position. Tom Wagner is co-chair of Resources, and we have our president who is Senate, and Senator Kevin Myers is the majority leader.
We need to wrap it up, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
You have 30 seconds. Okay, now let's go to Daisha Eaton for Linda Menard.
We're going to continue this. So,
okay.
As you said, you've worked in the bipartisan coalition. Many
Correct.
In your party are critical, including Mr. Dunleavy here.
Correct.
How do you feel about it? What's your take on the situation?
Well, every time you have an election, there's no magic wand or no magic ball to say what's going to be the result. So you look at people, we're all good Alaskans. I think we're all awestruck with Alaska. So let's build on that. Let's figure out what we can do in commons. We already stated early in the organization that there were certain things that would not be for discussion. Like, for instance, if you're pro-life or pro-choice, and we would just try to get a very good balanced budget. And our area is the fastest growing area in the state. And certainly, I don't want to not play a role in trying to bring the infrastructure that's so badly needed. And I know a little bit of that. I had 4 years on transportation, one as vice chair. So I know roads, bridges, the airports, we need this, and I have to play a part and bring capital projects back, and I can't do it sitting in the corner.
Let's hear from Mr. Dunleavy, 30 seconds.
Once again, the current coalition in the Senate is controlled by Democrats, and again, I have to emphasize, folks that are in the Democratic Party, which I have many friends and family, they have a specific approach to solving problems. Republicans have a specific approach to solving problems. I just feel that in the last couple of years, especially this past year, that the Senate has not really solved problems. Right to life bills have not made it through the Senate. The issue of incentivizing more oil flow has not made it through the Senate. The Alaska gas pipeline has not made it through the Senate. It appears that everything ends in the Senate.
Okay, Jill Burke.
Okay, my question is for Linda Menard. You know, we hear a lot of candidates talk about needing sustainable revenue and reasonable spending. Mm-hmm. You have been in Juneau. If you
Correct.
Are to go back to Juneau, are there places to trim in the budget, and what do we do to make sure that our revenue is more either diversified or sustainable or stable?
Well, of course, the governor comes out with his budget first, which is December 15th, and he even wrote in Anchorage Daily News, he was very pleased that we stayed within his parameters of the capital budget. So it's a process where he does his budget first, and then we look at what we can do and as far as the capital budget and the Senate part, and then we pass it down to the House while they're working on the operating budget. So I feel that's a good process. It's been in works for a long time. And so you have, in the meantime, you have all the committees and co-chairs of the finance and the hearings, and you go and you have your input. And I certainly have brought it home for the Valley, and I'm very proud of that. Thank
you. Mr. Dunleavy, 30 seconds, please, sir.
The current operating budget is unsustainable. Especially given the diminishing oil flow in the pipeline. I think what we're going to need to do is, as I mentioned before in previous meetings, that the discussion is going to morph from more oil to the budget over the next legislative session, and this is something we're going to have to tackle. Budget's going north, spending's going north, revenues are going south, and we're in trouble.
Daisha Eaton, you have another question for Mr. Dunleavy.
So let's continue on this subject, Mr. Dunleavy. Many say the budget needs to be trimmed. You're talking about it right now. How would you do it? Be specific. There are tough choices.
First thing I do is I go back to the Constitution and see what's constitutionally mandated. For example, education is embedded in the Constitution. So education, which is probably a $1 billion-plus endeavor in Alaska right now, that should be looked at, that should be funded fully, that should be taken care of, because the framers of the Constitution saw education as a priority for the state of Alaska.
What would you cut, though?
I would cut programs that are not necessarily mandated by the Constitution. I would cut programs that, I wouldn't be given $4 million to the University of Alaska to help with the shootout. There's a number of things, but I'd have to look into the budget to see exactly what we would cut.
Linda Menard, 30 seconds, comment.
I find that an interesting response, since Mr. Dunleavy has taken around $70,000 for about 10 days work with the mentor program, which directly comes out of the university. So I'm very offended by that, because we already these are stellar teachers, 18 stellar teachers, and we already have a person by the name of Kathy Rhodes, who is also stellar, and then we pile on one additional administrator. So that's offensive to me, because that he's a direct recipient of what you've asked.
Okay, we need to stick pretty close to our time limits here because we're going to run into trouble at the end of the show if we don't. Now, I'm going to ask a question. You each have about 30 seconds to respond. I'm going to go with Mr. Dunleavy first, then Linda Menard. So you have 30 seconds to respond to my question, which is essentially this. What can the state of Alaska do, Mr. Dunleavy, if anything, to reduce the cost of health care? And I know it's not a 30-second answer. Just give us the best you can.
Well, health care is an issue for every state and everyone at this stage of the game. We'd have to look at what formulas are embedded in our health and human services budget. We're going to have to work hard, to be honest with you. It's not an easy answer. It's something that can't really be answered in 30 seconds, but we're going to have to take a look at what other states are doing, other models, and see how they can be applied to Alaska, because we are going to have to tackle this issue, and it's going to have to become cost effective.
Thank you. Linda Menard.
Thank you. That is something that's very dear to my heart. When we owned the two dental practices, my husband and I insisted that all our employees had insurance, not only the spouse, but also the children. So I've been very key in looking at this. I do not hold a committee seat on health and social services, but I do believe that we want to make this work so that people are not going to the lower 48. I've sat on the hospital board and termed out for 8 years, so I'm very in tune to how we have to make this work in the state of Alaska.
Okay, we have one more question, and that is for, we'll start with Linda Menard, then go to Mr. Dunleavy. Our prisons are overcrowded. We continue to send prisoners to jail outside. Is there an alternative to this expensive practice of overcrowding our jails and prisons?
Well, certainly many things have been looked at, and we are bringing our prisoners home. Of course, we have the Goose Creek prison that is now, I heard just yesterday, there's 200 prisoners that are already back. So we did a soft opening, and so there's many programs. It's a really nice facility, and they have a lot of areas where they're going to be able for recidivism, I think, really get a handle on it. So I encouraged the governor to put the money there, and I also sat on the subcommittee, finance committee for the
Thank
prison
you.
Corrections.
Mr. Dunleavy.
Short of not committing crimes, I tend to agree with the senator. We have built a new prison out in the Mattsu Valley to hold prisoners in Alaska. And again, this is an issue that we're going to have to keep looking at. And possibly expand our prison system within state.
Now we come to the segment of the show where the candidates can ask one another questions. We'll start with Mr. Dunleavy Ms. Menard for Mr. Dunleavy. And you have 45 seconds to respond, and then you, as the questioner, have 15 seconds to comment on the answer. So go ahead, Linda Menard. Question for Mr. Dunleavy.
Thank you. Mr. Dunleavy, do you think teachers should be paid overtime for working evenings and weekends?
Teaching is a profession. As many folks know, I've been a teacher for many years. I'm an educator, still hold a current teaching certificate, and I've been in education my entire career. Education is a profession. It's not an hourly profession. People are paid by contract, and folks that go into teaching know that they are going to be working on weekends and at night. Is it something that's ideal? No, not necessarily, but I do think there's ways to address that, and I think looking at teacher pay is one way.
Linda Menard, 15 seconds.
Thank you. 10 months after signing a three-year contract as superintendent of the Northwest Arctic Borough School District with a comfortable six-figure salary, you demanded that the school board in Kotzebue increase your salary by $13,000 because you were having to work evenings and weekends. Why different rules for superintendents? Shouldn't you lead by example?
Good question. That'll have to be rhetorical unless Mr. Dunleavy, he has a question for Ms. Menard.
Okay, thank you. Linda, in your ad, you tout that being part of the Senate majority has and will allow you to be a more effective legislator. However, two bills you highlight in your ads that you co-sponsored, one, a Stand Your Ground bill, and the other, parental notification bill, died in the very Senate majority you are part of and support. How do you reconcile the fact that the very Senate majority you support killed the very bills you co-sponsored? How does this make you an effective legislator?
45 seconds.
Thank you very much. Well, you know, that's just, you put out your effort, you do your best. I worked that, I went through legal and tried to get the good legislation passed. But you, at the end of the day, you can only hope that your bills will get passed. And that doesn't happen. That happens over and over again. But every 2 years, there's a new legislative session, and you start trying to get your bills through again. So it doesn't mean that you can't pick it up and start over again. But there were a lot of successes that I had.
15 seconds.
But if the Senate doesn't change and the same players are there, we're probably going to end up with the same results.
Thank you. Linda Menard for Mr. Dunleavy.
Do you think that a contract amounts to a promise, that signing a contract amounts to a pledge for the duration of the contract?
I do, but it also depends upon what language is in a contract. In many contracts, there's languages that allow one party or the other to discuss leaving the contract or getting out of the contract. But a contract that's signed and that folks expect to be fulfilled should be fulfilled. But again, it depends on what's in the contract.
Linda Menard, 15 seconds.
18 months after the school board gave you your $13,000 raise, just 8 months after that you signed your new improved 3-year contract, you quit, left Kotzebue and moved to the Mat-Su. If you're elected, how do people know you won't quit that job too? Because you know we don't like that.
Mr. Dunleavy, your question for Linda Menard.
You are being hailed in mailers and ads by the public employee unions as being their candidate that supports a return to the defined benefit system for public employees. With an estimated $12 billion unfunded liability in the original public employee defined benefit program, what specific cuts to the operating budget would you make to fund this new retirement system?
That's a good question, and I appreciate that. I have been a big supporter of defined contributions or defined benefits. And of course, people that have tier one, in fact, I just saw a bumper sticker that from a woman driving said tier one and single. I mean, it was excellent. It was just, and you're probably the recipient of one or two. But what it is now is people do not understand that that the school teachers and employees do not have Social Security. So we've got to do something better for the police officers, the firefighters, a whole group of them, so at least they can retire out of Alaska to have the kind of retirement like you said is what
working people...
Thank
you very much. Mr. Dunleavy, 15 seconds.
What would you cut in the operating budget to pay for this new retirement system?
I think Alaska is very, very fortunate. We can look at that. We can negotiate. We can compromise. We are in the black. Why do we have to cut? Why can't we just pay down with all our savings account, pay down some of that unfunded liability?
You had one more question, but I was going to take that as your last question, the question you just asked.
I thought it was a rebuttal.
Well, we sort of got out of sync there. Do you have 15 seconds here to tidy it up?
But that's all. That's it, I guess. Just what would we cut, or how would we change the operating budget to pay for a new program that could cost billions of dollars?
Okay, now we go back to the reporters and their questions. We'll start with Jill Burke.
Okay, my question's for Linda Menard. Okay. Funding during the primary shows strong industry backing for Mr. Dunleavy. What should we read from this, and what does this tell you about the job you're doing for Alaskans?
Well, 45 seconds here.
You can read about it. What you can read into it, I guess, would be politics. Politics come into play. But I have been very supportive with the oil companies. I've done everything we can for new oil, new companies like Buccaneer. We did a 30% reduction for 10 years. We've tried to push in the legacy fields, Kuparik and Prudhoe Bay, trying to entice them all the time with either tax holidays for more drilling so more oil can, there can be more throughput down. So I, at the end of the day, I don't get into a bunch of squabbling and let it ruin my day. I am supported by all spectrums all over, and I appreciate
it. Okay. Let's go to Mr. Dunleavy, 30 seconds.
I would agree. I think folks should look at the APOC forms that both of us have. When they do, they'll find out that my opponent, Linda, is heavily supported by the public employee unions. If folks look at my APOC reports, there's not a lot of oil. There are folks that are in various businesses throughout the state of Alaska, but there's also a lot of educators that have supported my campaign.
Thank you, sir. Daisha Eaton.
Continuing on this subject, you've said you have some strong industry backing, and this could be an advantage in some respects, but how can the public be assured that you'll be an independent thinker?
I've been an independent thinker my whole career, and folks that know me all over the state through my education profession and the various jobs they've done know that's true. I was elected to a school board and then was elected to be president my second year into being on the school board by folks from different persuasions, different backgrounds, and different political beliefs. And I've been able to work with those folks, and I'll continue to work with people of different persuasions in Juneau.
Okay, Linda Menard, 30 seconds.
Is this the closing statement?
No, this is just 30 seconds of comment on his answer. If you would like to comment on his answer.
I'll pass on that.
Okay. Once again, we have questions from the panelists. 45 seconds for the person who's asked the question, and a 30-second comment or rebuttal by the other candidate. Jill Burke.
Okay. For Mike Dunleavy again. So you're an educator. Let's go back to education for a moment. I believe you've said you think there's room for all kinds, vouchers, homeschool, public school. I'm curious if you believe that spreading education and education dollars around so much weakens or strengthens public schools, and why or why not?
That's a very good question. I believe that families and students, they should be able to select the type of education that their child is going to receive. I believe that various methods and innovative ways of educating a student will only enhance education, including public education. I've been a supporter of public education my entire career. That's my job, that's my profession. And I believe that by supporting homeschool, by supporting other innovative approaches to education, we will strengthen education.
Okay, 30 seconds from Linda Menard.
Well, I have been on the school board for 12 years, and I understand education in the Valley, and I am so extremely proud of all the choices we've come up with, but I do not want to cripple the public school system because the Matsu, above all, offers more choices from charter schools to career tech schools, and we do give vouchers out to people who do homeschooling so they can go and do some extracurricular stuff. So again, that is something that I take very seriously, passing out vouchers at this time. And if it did were to happen, I would try to work within that framework. But I am too a teacher here, and I have a degree K-8, and I've taught enough in our schools to know.
Okay, let's go with Deja Eaton.
Is there hope for renewable energy in South Central Alaska, for example, wind power?
Mm-hmm. Well, wind power is great, and I really appreciate the port being able to get those coils when the ship came in over to Fire Island. But what people tend to forget, we need transmission lines to go with wind power or any other renewable energy, and it costs $1 million a mile for transmissions, just like it costs $1 million a mile for a single lane of paved road, and $2 million for railroads. So it's complicated. I think Kodiak does an awesome job with their wind power, and they're successful at it. So again, we have to be open and see, but we really have to pencil it out and make sure that financially it can work.
Let's have another question here, so if we have a little time. Jill Burke, and we'll go to Mr. Dunleavy. Do you have a question for him?
I do. One of the things you've said that you would work hard for if elected is to help restore, revive, salvage the salmon runs for personal use fishing in the Valley. That's a big task, and so I'm curious what you view how you view the legislature's role in accomplishing that, and what it is you think that you can personally do if you're elected to bring the fish back into those streams.
Yeah, very good question. It's sport fishing is a $100 to $150 million industry in the Matsu Valley. With the King Runs not returning this year, the economy's it's really taking a negative hit. I think we need to take a look at what is occurring. We know there's probably some high seas interception, but there may be some things happening in our watershed as well. I would be an advocate for doing some complete and extensive research on what is happening, but also I think we need to be looking at the possibility of increasing our hatchery stock, because as the population increases and the pressure increases on these fisheries, we're going to have more fish taken. And so we need to be looking at increasing hatchery stock, and this will also have the desired effect of maybe taking a little pressure off the Kenai as well.
Linda Menard, 30-second commentary, please.
Well, thank you. I'm comfortable with that question since in 2010 I was the Kenai River Classic winner, first female. Mm-hmm. But anyway, yes, I do think that there's a lot of byproduct that's being caught, say like the pollock industry. When they're out too far, they get a byproduct of our young kings, and they have to throw them out because they're not licensed to catch them. So I think that is a problem. We're very, very lucky to have the rich industry that we have in the Matsu Borough, and we're doing everything we can.
Thank you very much, Linda Menard. Let's go to the host now has a few questions, and that's yours truly, and I'm going to start with Mike Dunleavy, and then we'll go to Linda Menard. Mr. Dunleavy, the war on drugs, has the war on drugs so far been a success or a failure or something else?
Yeah, well, it depends on how you look at it, right? I mean, it's difficult to say. We still have drugs. We have a large drug issue in Alaska as well as the lower 48. So I guess from that standpoint, it's been a failure. But at the same time, if we didn't attack it, if we didn't work on solving that issue, we may have a larger drug problem. So it's very difficult to say.
Thank you. Linda Menard, 30 seconds.
That's a topic I don't know a whole lot of. I apologize. I know that the officers are skilled, the ones that have gone to study the issue and are involved in it in our department. They certainly must have a handle on it. I haven't really, dug deep into that issue.
Here's another question, and we'll have to go quickly here. This will start with Linda Menard. Linda Menard, does the Alaska Permanent Dividend attract people to Alaska looking for free money?
I would say not, but I do believe, we have, at least in the Matsu, the largest senior population, and I think that that's very helpful to the seniors. So I think that the PFD needs to stay with Alaskans because it spins off, I think they figured, like seven times once you get your check. So I don't think it really draws people. We have extreme weather, extreme beauty, extreme mountains, but I think to just say that they're coming up here for the unless
thank
they're
you,
a
thank
real
you very
large
much.
Family.
Mr. Dunleavy, your thoughts?
I agree with Linda. I maybe the myth of free money lures people to Alaska, but I'm not sure if the permanent fund really does that.
Okay. Now we'll go to our closing statements of 1 minute each, and we'll start with Mr. Dunleavy first.
Thank you very much. My opponent and I differ in both style and substance. I have made a long history of tackling tough problems head-on in the public sector by bringing people of different persuasions together to create solutions. I have spent decades brokering solutions to problems by working hard and smart and doing what is right for people. I can and will work to bring Alaskans together. Gridlock is not in my vocabulary and is not a tool to be used if you are looking for long-term solutions and working relationships. Likewise, lending one's vote to enable a ruling Senate majority that prides itself on gridlock is equally bad. I have every intention of being part of the solution and not part of the problem. It is not my nature to simply be content with the role of being a member of a body. Throughout the years, I've earned a reputation for listening to people to better define what their concern is and then bringing all of the interested parties together to be part of the solution. That is what leadership is all about, and that is what I'm all about. Ours is not a contested legislative race. As a result, whoever wins the August 28th primary will serve as your senator in Juneau for the next 2 years. I hope to earn your vote in next week's election and will continue to work hard to justify your vote every day of my term. Thank you.
Linda Menard, 1 minute closing statement.
Thank you, Michael. I too am asking for your vote on August 28th because I know I'm the right person to return to the Senate in the Matsu. And I want to keep fighting for Valley residents. I've sat on more than a dozen issues. In 2011, I was voted the best politician in the Matsu Borough, and I've gotten many, many awards. I won't take my time up to certainly talk about them, but being part of the community means to me having an active role in giving back to the community. I've been happily giving back for decades, and I want to serve you so I can continue that trend. This job to me is about service. It's not about titles or eagles or starting up your political career. It's whose name is on something or not. It's not that either. It's about political one-manship. This job is all about you, the people. For the past 4 years, I've missed 2 days in 4 years. I'm on the floor to vote. If you have any questions at all, please contact my campaign, menard2012@gmail.com. By voting for me on August 28th, you'll do more in my mind than checking a box. You'll be putting me in a position of great responsibility.
Okay, we're going to have to stop it right there.
Thank you,
Linda Menard. And thank you, viewers. Please stay tuned. We'll meet more legislative candidates, starting with the candidates for House District 7.
Behind the scenes, inside the action, on top of every moment, PBS NewsHour is your all-access pass to the 2012 political conventions. On air and online with interviews, streaming video, live updates, and analysis. Join NewsHour anchors Judy Woodruff and Gwen Ifill for up-to-the-minute coverage. PBS NewsHour, Convention Central 2012.
We had been called up for the first time. Wildfires were getting close to homes. At that moment, I got my first taste of just how important the Guard is.
Be there for your community at NationalGuard.com.
You're watching KAKM in Anchorage, KYUK in Bethel, KTOO in Juneau, and listening on KSKA Anchorage.
Welcome back. Now let's meet the candidates for House District 7. First of all, Wes Keller and Roger Purcell. We'll have opening statements, starting first with Mr. Keller. 1 minute, sir.
Oh, thank you very much. Yes, I'm Wes Keller, House District 7. I've served in the State House of Representatives since 2007, and I'm looking to go back, so I'm asking for your consideration. It's coming Tuesday, or a week from tomorrow it is, no? And I'm a longtime Alaskan, a longtime Valley resident. I have a great family, a wife, 43 years, three kids, six grandkids. It doesn't get much better than that. I am a college grad, math, science, education. I came up here, flew for the Air Guard, Air Force pilot training. Currently, I serve on the, I'm the chair of the House Health and Social Services. I serve on the Judiciary Committee, Vice Chair of State Affairs. I'm also on the Alaska Health Commission. It takes a lot of my time and a lot of responsibility, and CACFA, Citizens Advisory Commission on Federal Areas. And I just would ask you to consider letting me continue the work that I have begun. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Now we'll turn to 1 minute from Roger Purcell.
Hi, thank you. Appreciate being here. Roger Purcell, and I'm running as candidate for House District 7. Been in Alaska for over 47 years. Wife and son are from the Valley, from the Palmer area and that. I grew up in Houston, and then moved around the state a little bit for working, but I joined the, came into the race because District 7 is actually the new crossroads into the development and commerce for the state of Alaska. We have the rail spur coming into District 7, eventually with Port McKenzie coming on, and then you have the commercial roads that'll be going to Port McKenzie, which will open up natural resource development throughout the interior of Alaska. And we worked hard as in Houston and that to get those areas to get started. And I believe strongly that we can actually do a good setup for the area. So I put my name in because I've been working hard on this and getting that development. And I appreciate your vote on the 28th. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Now we'll turn to questions from our panel of journalists. The person who receives the question will have 45 seconds to answer, and your opponent will have 30 seconds to comment on the answer. Let's start with Jill Burke.
Okay, my question is for Wes Keller. We've spent a lot of time and energy as a state debating over and fiddling with oil taxes. I know that you said this summer that Alaska is so desperate to keep oil flowing that the tax rate or the tax itself really doesn't matter, meaning that it's flow and royalties that we really need to be concerned about. Explain this.
Oh, sure. We have 90% of our revenue is dependent on oil. The pipeline is like one-third full and it's declining, and we need to do whatever we can to increase the flow in that pipe so that we can get some money generated for the general fund before we're in trouble. So there's a the actual production taxes on the North Slope, on the Big Three, can be adjusted to increase production.
And you think it really doesn't matter, or it matters to an extent where it should be lower?
Yes, it should be lower.
Okay, a comment from you, Mr. Purcell.
Yes, on the oil tax on the area, we need to look real strongly into how to get more oil into the pipeline. So we need to have a good dialogue working through the governor's office and with the legislators, with the oil producers, to find a way to increase oil coming through. If we don't get more oil coming through the line, that is where we're going to lose a lot of our royalties and a lot of our funding. So it's very important that we find a way to work with everybody on that.
Now let's go to Daisha Eaton for her question.
This is for Mr. Purcell. You say you want to eliminate government assistance if you're elected. How do you propose responsibly doing that, particularly in roadless bush communities with little economy?
Okay. What I talked about is cutting the budget, and the area that I would cut the budget in is especially in the administration section, the operation budget. I feel we could easily do a 3% cut across the board all the way through in the administration. They have this.
So you're not for eliminating government assistance? Am I incorrect?
You're incorrect on that. That is correct. My statement when I came through there was by cutting the operation budget inside there is way over bloated. In the past, when you do a 3% straight across cut, they cut the working class out, the ones that plow the streets or fix different areas and that. We need to target specific areas in the budget to cut and make them accountable for those areas, not just giving them a 3% or a zero balance budget, because management then cuts where the working class is.
And we're going to have to leave it there, Mr. Keller. Mr. Purcell. 30-second comment, Mr. Keller.
Thank you. There's a two-prong approach that needs to be taken here. One is, of course, to make sure that the money that we spend is being spent efficiently and properly. And where I am personally is that we cannot expand. We cannot afford to expand to include more and more people in those entitlements.
Now we'll return to Jill Burke for another question.
Okay, I'll follow up on the same question. My question is for Roger Purcell. So on the issue of government assistance, do you believe that government assistance, meaning for social services, for welfare, for Medicaid, those sorts of things that affect the health and welfare of the general population, needs to be adjusted in any way?
I believe in those areas that we shouldn't just be giving handouts. We should be helping the people to get back on their feet, finding areas where they can find employment, and getting them into the workplace. And I believe by natural resource development throughout the state, we can create more jobs to do that.
Where would you reduce first?
My first reduction would be in the operation budget, like we said before.
Yeah, not the administration, but if you were going to adjust or reduce programs that affected the health and welfare of average citizens, those types of government assistance.
I do not have an area that I would cut at this time, because I would have to study it with a group that would be professionals in that area, and I don't have that expertise right here for making that comment. I would not be cutting areas that would not provide food or housing for people to put them on the streets. I think that's, or seniors.
Mr. Keller for a 30-second comment on this.
That's a very sobering thought to be thinking of this. For one thing, one out of six Alaskans now are on Medicaid. There's a lot of people on various forms of public assistance. And whatever we do, as chair of HESS, I see a steady stream of people asking for help in areas where the state may not be doing an adequate job. And it's heart-wrenching, and it's a real concern, and it's one that is ongoing, and that's why part of the reason I want to go back to continue.
Let's turn to Daisha Eaton, who has a question for Wes Keller.
Mr. Keller, many say charter schools are unconstitutional in Alaska. What makes you think they are, and why do you believe they're a good idea here?
I said they're unconstitutional?
No, I said many. I said some, many. I've heard a few people say that they believe they may be unconstitutional in Alaska. Are you for charter schools?
Well, absolutely. They're a fantastic form of alternative education for parents. As parents, we all have to look at our children and get the best education possible. And any school district that provides alternatives for the parent to choose, more power to them.
So obviously you support them, but I guess I'm asking, how do you believe they're in line with the Constitution?
Completely. I don't understand any conflict. I mean, they're fine. The Constitution says we have to provide a free education to the children of Alaska, and I believe we're doing that, and charter schools are part of that program.
Mr. Purcell, 30-second comment, please.
Yeah, on the charter schools and alternate schools and that, I believe that they are very needed in our makeup of our school kids, and that especially when you have kids that are specializing in areas that may need more help or stuff, that they can actually go to schools that actually can go into those needs and that. So I believe that by providing this area of the school children that we can actually better educate our children. So I strongly believe that these are good areas for our kids all the way through.
Okay, now I will have a couple questions for the guests, for the candidates. You'll each have 30 seconds to respond to the question. Question will start with you, Mr. Keller, is what are we going to do? What is the future of the $41 billion permanent fund?
Well, there's we've got to remember we're one of a committee of 60. My own personal belief is that it needs to be preserved. I think the best use of the money in the permanent fund is for the citizens of Alaska to spend it on their own volition. It's based on the Constitution, natural resources developed for the maximum benefit, and if they choose, that's great. So that's not to say that it isn't an asset of the state that is there if we end up in fiscal problems. It has to be there.
Okay, Mr. Purcell, 30 seconds, sir.
Going all the way back from conception when Governor Hammond put it through, I think the voters of Alaska have the right to choose where that money goes and not just the legislation or the governor picking out where we should spend it all on that. So I think we should leave it like it is with the people having the right to vote on where it gets spent on.
Okay. This question will be for Mr. Purcell first and then Mr. Keller. It's a follow-up on the permanent fund question, and it is this. Does the permanent fund dividend attract deadbeats to Alaska looking for free money?
You know, what we get for the permanent dividend is not high enough to bring, actually, I believe, people in here that can keep the higher cost of living in Alaska actually here. So if some people are coming up just for the dividend check, it doesn't take them long to realize that that check does not subsidize the higher cost here and that. So if they are, I'm sure they're leaving in a short period of time.
Mr. Keller.
I believe it does, but I don't think it is a sufficient enough problem to be that concerned about. I'm more concerned with people coming to Alaska because of the entitlement programs that we, if we continue to expand and have too good of programs. You use the term deadbeat. There's a lot of people, you know, that are looking for a free ride, and it is a problem. It is a concern.
Okay, now we have questions from the candidates for one another, and we'll start with Mr. Purcell for Mr. Keller, and you have 45 seconds, Mr. Keller, and Mr. Purcell then has 30 seconds to comment on your answer. So your question, Mr. Purcell.
I guess my question would be, we know that the budget is too high in the operating budget. How are you going back, would cut the budget? Where would you actually cut it at?
Great question. I think that you're absolutely right. It is a real concern. It continues to increase. My approach to the budget is not to cut. It is to be really efficient in reviewing the budget, where it's going for, whether we're getting what we think we're paying for. I believe the House majority last year embarked on a process of budget review reform that I am very excited about, eager to continue, and that's where I would go with the budget cuts. Thanks.
Mr. Purcell, 15 seconds. I misinformed you. I said 30. It's only 15.
That was my question.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Mr. Keller for Mr. Purcell.
Roger. You have indicated several times that if you got down there, you would just get the pipeline built. And I was wondering just how you were thinking about getting it paid for, with the where would you go for the money to pay for the gas pipeline?
Great question, thank you. I believe we have too much regulation that actually stops the building of the gas pipeline. So I think we need to get more government out of the regulation section. We have not being able to put enough gas in the pipeline, restricted in that. We need to remove that out of the what has already been voted on by the legislation. I think we need to get easier right-of-ways. We need to work with the EPA to stop, and then work with private industry to get a base seller down there, like either it's to Japan or some other country, to use that as the basis for building it. But we need to get out of the way to let private industry go in and work to build the gas pipeline. And I think we as a government stall this too much and prevent that from happening.
Mr. Keller, 15 seconds.
Yeah, if we're going to pay, get it done without waiting for the market, obviously we have to pay for it. And the question was, where would you go? And you're saying that you would not get it done. You would wait until for the market to function, and that's what we've been doing. And I just am very pleased with your endorsement of our way we approach it.
Okay, Mr. Purcell, it's again your opportunity to ask Mr. Keller a question.
Mr. Keller, as representative in Wasilla, there was quite a bit of time when we requested that you would come to different meetings and over from a lot of the different areas the last few years. And we would not see you at these meetings, and we would not see you like once every 5 years to the senior centers and that. If you're reelected, how can we expect you to be showing up and actually being at these meetings, these local meetings and that, to talk to the people and let us know what's going on?
That's a not an honest representation. In the first place, I did not represent you, so anything that you asked me to come to often would be in the terms of the Houston activities, and I put a high value on working with the delegation. Representative Mark Newman was there, and I talked to him a lot about how we are going to approach, for example, capital expenditures across the valley. And I do show up at the senior centers. My area was Wasilla proper, not rural Alaska. I have enjoyed very much getting out to the road service area meetings and the community meetings, and I plan to continue to do that. It's an exciting part of my job that I look forward to.
Mr. Purcell, 15 seconds.
Yeah. Well, Ms. Keller, I appreciate that comment, but having a business in Wasilla, and that we did ask you to come to some of our business meetings and that in Wasilla and that over the years, not just myself, but assembly members and that. So I would disagree with that comment, because we had invited you to those meetings as a business owner in Wasilla, where you were the representative.
Mr. Keller, you have an opportunity to ask a question.
Yeah, Roger, in your biographical statement, you talk about mistakes that you've made that you've learned from in the past. And frankly, I think it's a real fair question to ask you what mistakes you're talking about. When I go online and look, of course, I'm not going to believe everything I see online, but there's a lot there. And I've heard comments. You made comments about the bankruptcies and the resigning as mayor and these kind of things. But what mistakes have you made? And specifically, what have you learned? From those mistakes that you said that you have.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, mistakes were made when I was mayor, and I will not hide or run from those mistakes and that. When I first got on, I was elected as a city council member. I did do my whole term as a city council member. The mayor is appointed by the council for a select time frame and that. Should not have made the traffic stop. When I did that, I totally apologize for that. That was something I shouldn't. But at the time, we had very few police officers. They were coming in. Our code does allow for it, but it was a mistake. I shouldn't have done that. Same thing with driving the police car. Even though our code says we could have done it, I shouldn't have done those things. So therefore, there are some areas, and since they give you such a short period of time to get things done as mayor and stuff, I pushed a little too hard for different areas. And so therefore, those shouldn't have been as pushed as hard as they were. They should have been drawn out a little longer.
Mr. Keller, 15-second comment on what you heard.
Oh, I just, no comment, just other than the fact that I do appreciate the fact that you said that we're all human and we make mistakes and we learn from them, and I can relate to that approach. So, thank you.
Mr. Purcell, your question for Mr. Keller.
How would you work to get the unemployment rate in our area? It's up to 17%, 10% in the majority of the area in that. Do you have any plan to lower our unemployment rate?
Absolutely. That's an exciting question, actually. Jobs are what it's all about. That's where the entitlements stop, where the jobs begin and the families take over. And the way you've already actually identified one of the areas, we have too many regulations that restrict business. We need to send the signal that Alaska is open for business, that we can get jobs generated and encouraged in the area. We actually have done quite well. We've got the rail spur going, we've got Kibata, we've got the Goose Creek, and we see have a lot of jobs expanding in our area. And I think just a continued examination of our regulations to eliminate those that are detrimental to business is a key.
Mr. Purcell, 15 seconds.
I think that's a good, but we also have a lot of infrastructure projects that need to get done. Like DOT, who is going to be putting several businesses with their new road projects out of business, which has increased the unemployment rate. We really need to work hard to make sure that that stuff doesn't happen.
Okay, let's go back to our panelists. And Jill Burke, you have a question for Mr. Purcell.
I do. I want to revisit a topic that was brought up just a little bit earlier, which is this 3% reduction in the administration. I believe that you have in the past said that the administration is too top heavy with senior managers and other types of folks that you feel may be able to be eliminated and still have government function correctly. I'm curious where exactly you might see those reductions coming, like departments, particular staffing positions?
I believe the full administration all the way across the board is top heavy. If you take a look at the operating budget and you take a look at the line item areas when they bring them all the way down, a lot of times administrations put a lot of higher management in there that could actually be done by lower management, keep the jobs. If this was the if we were a business working inside there, you'd be way top heavy inside and not enough the workers actually on the street. So I believe that we need to go in there and with just a short period of time, you can't answer all that in there, but you can turn around there and specifically take those areas, cut them down 3% and start reducing the budget and still keep the people working on the street.
Mr. Keller, 30 seconds.
Again, I think that the answer is in the budget review reform, and I think there's a lot of things that we can do to really improve the situation there. Maybe one of them would be to make a bipartisan budget so that we have one year we do nothing but look at the budget, another year we look at our personal bills. The problem right now is that the issues during session often have to do with the increments in the budget, not with what we're actually buying. So it's difficult to identify areas where there's waste or inefficiencies, and the budget review process reform is just incredibly important in that area.
Okay, thank you very much. Your comments, sir? Any comment?
On that, yes, it's we need to cut. It's too high. We need to start looking at reduction, not continue to raise the budget, especially with the decline of oil at this time and the cost of oil. So we do have to look at reductions, and we need to look at the waste and also the top-heavy administration.
Okay, let's go back to Daisha Eaton, please.
This is a question for Mr. Keller. This year, the DNR Commissioner Sullivan changed the wording of the DNR's mission statement, and I believe he removed the words conserve and enhance. Do you believe this was proper? Why or why not?
I have not reviewed that, so I'm not going to give you a quick answer, but I'm very encouraged to find out that they're looking at their mission statements, because that's what the House majority asked the different departments to do, to go back and look at evaluate their missions, you know, get them straight, and then come back with ways to measure the programs that we put in, both for efficiency and effectiveness. And so the fact that the DNR is looking at their mission is a sign of what the House majority has begun and what I hope that we can continue.
Mr. Purcell.
Yeah, I'm the vice chair for Massey Resource Conservation. I've been that for 4 years, and we've had to work with DNR in the past, and by changing some of their mission statements, I would hope it would streamline and make things easier for, especially for people working with DNR on land projects or future projects that create jobs and that. It's been very cumbersome in the past, and as sitting on the board, have noticed that they do need to revamp some of that area to make it more streamlined.
Okay, now let's go to Jill Burke for Mr. Keller.
Okay, as can happen from time to time, one event can become the thing that everybody talks about in a politician's career, if even briefly, overshadowing others, notorious, glorious, or otherwise. So let's talk about the Girl Scouts.
Okay.
You had held up a resolution honoring them for 100 years of service to try to ferret out whether they had a link to Planned Parenthood. If you had a chance to do it differently, would you? And I would ask, what's your favorite cookie?
Great. If I had a chance to do it over again, I'm going to start with that one. I would do exactly the same thing. I wanted to point out, first of all, I voted for the resolution to honor Girl Scouts. And scouting in America is just, it's super. And I got a chance to vote for it again on the floor. What we did was just ask the question, and there is a reputation of the connection there between Girl Scouts and Planned Parenthood.
Do you think that was the proper time to ask the question? Could you have asked that question at a time that may have been different in the process?
No, it's the first time we'd heard the bill, Jill, and actually I was the chair of the committee that day. Representative Lynn had stepped out, and I did not hold the bill up, I'm gonna say that, just because we keep the bill overnight for further evaluation, certainly. I mean, you could say that delays the bill.
Yeah, that's fair.
But so we do that all the time. In fact, rarely as a chair do I ever pass a bill.
Okay, favorite cookie.
Let's let Mr. Purcell, if he wants to get in here and take out the
girl. He needs his favorite cookie.
That'll have to go for his closing statement. His closing statement. Any thoughts here briefly?
The Girl Scouts, boy, I was a scoutmaster for 13 years. Girl Scouts are a great organization. The 100-year, we should honor them for all the good that they've done in the state. nationwide and that. So I support the Girl Scouts. My wife is a den leader right now for Cub Scouts, so we have to support our kids.
Okay. Daisha Eaton for Mr. Purcell.
Mr. Purcell, the Knick Arm Bridge. Who do you think should build it? How are we going to do it? How could this actually become a reality?
I think we should continue with the way it's been set up. I think they have funding from private industry to fund the $650 million to build it. It needs to be built. We've been talking about it for 50 years, and we have all the permits in place. We have everything ready to go. The governor, the legislators, the Senate, everybody should get behind it. We need to have that bridge. It is an economic boost with what's going on with District 7. It'll be the Golden Triangle to build interior Alaska, create the jobs, and I feel a bigger boom than actually the pipeline is at this point, or the gas pipeline. When we get that all finished, we will have more jobs and for long term, and not be relying on just one or two industries.
Let's get Mr. Purcell in here. Mr. Keller in here for 30 seconds.
Yeah, Kavada was formed in 2003, and it's been a process ever since then. It made a leap forward in 2006, I think it was, when Representative Stoltz made it so that they could bond and make the arrangements. It's on track, very exciting. I don't think I've ever really run across anybody that's against the Kavada Bridge. It's a process that we need to continue and continue to encourage.
Okay, I have some questions for you here as we approach the end of our show, and I'll start with you, Mr. Keller, and then we'll go to Mr. Purcell. You alluded to healthcare earlier and talked about that briefly. What can the state of Alaska do, if anything, to reduce the cost of healthcare to Alaska citizens?
In 30
I
seconds?
You're in a, I know you know a lot more than 30 seconds, but give us your best 30 seconds.
The best 30 seconds is please look at the recommendations and the reports by the Alaska Health Commission. We put a lot of hours and hours and hours into that, and we have a very respectable group there of people, and one of the the primary thing is transparency and market. If we can get the, we know what we're buying, then we can do better at evaluating, whether or not we're getting what we're paying for. And that's a process, a lot of very complicated directions you can go with that, but that's it.
Mr. Purcell.
Healthcare isn't my strongest suit. I would have to actually bring in professionals and talk with them and work with them on there. Work on the issues and that to find out what is the best solution. So I'm very not able to answer a specific area because, like I said, it is not my strong suit.
Okay, now we'll go to the closing statements. And Mr. Keller, you have a minute and some extra time to give us the cookie question. Oh.
The cookie question is, without a doubt, no question, it's the chocolate mint. That's the best there is. I'm encouraged in this campaign. I've been endorsed by many. I have had 50 or 60 individual contributors to my campaign. I've also been endorsed by Conservative Patriots Group, National Rifle Association, Alaska Right to Life, the National Federation of Independent Businesses, the Alaska Outdoor Council, the Sportsman Conservation Alliance. The importance of these endorsements to me is that it indicates they realize what I advocate for. We're kindred spirits. I'm eager to get back and continue to work on the issues that I share with them and would join them on. And I just, for our area in particular, we've already touched on it, the jobs, the economic development that needs to happen in the area so that people can afford to raise their family appropriately is just really important. So thank you. I'd appreciate your vote on the 28th.
Thank you. Mr. Purcell, we'll go to you, and you have a little bit over 1 minute for your closing statement.
Yeah. I want to thank you for the opportunity to come today. District 7 is a very large district, and the way the district is set up is the needs in District 7 from Talkeetna down to Wasilla are very different. And so therefore the representative comes down and works in Juneau with this, has to understand that all the different needs need to be met and have to be broken apart. District 7 being brought in is the new economic development road going up into the interior of Alaska. We need to work on that very strongly to get those areas done properly. The Department of Transportation is working on a very old 25-year-old plan for our area. We've outgrown it. We've been the fastest growing area in Alaska, the 42nd fastest in the nation. We need to get back as a legislative and work with DOT to upgrade those plans that meet the needs of the public and the residents of the area. With the fastest growing senior population, I don't think we've actually worked hard enough to help the seniors in the areas and find out the areas that they're going to be needing strongly. We're growing so fast that we have to have someone down there who's going to work hard and put the effort in to meet the needs of our new district in that. And I would appreciate your vote on August 28th. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Please stay with us. It won't be long before we'll be meeting the candidates for House District 8.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak to the voters, my friends and neighbors of the Palmer District. I came to Alaska as a teenager and first lived in Hoonah, Bethel, Fort Yukon, and Seward. And 22 years ago, with my husband, intentionally chose Palmer because it's a wholesome community to raise our four children. My life has prepared me for this next step. I was a stay-at-home mom for a number of years, worked in the private sector, and the most recent decade worked extensively in policy and legislative work. I'm very honored to have been appointed by Governor Parnell to the seat vacated by our dear friend, Representative Gatto. My conservative values reflect those of the district. I have a strong moral compass, and I'm a good consensus builder, and will work towards increased opportunities for businesses and for individuals to help ensure Mat-Su and Alaska continue to be a wholesome place to raise families, to live and work and play. I'm principled, and I will stand up for our district and our rights and our fair share. I'm nothing if not tireless, pragmatic, and will listen to good ideas. I am collaborative, yet have strong convictions. That's the kind of person I am. That's the kind of legislator I am. However, legislators must pass bills, not principles. And I have the experience and understand the process, and also have a good understanding of Alaska because of my long life here. I have the tools necessary to bring the principles of limited government to Alaska's government. And I figure if my son, who's just returned from 5 deployments, can stand up and serve his country, the least I can do is stand up and serve our district. Thank you for this opportunity. Please choose Hughes, August 28th. And if you have something important to share with me, I'd love to hear from you and your questions. 841-1634 is my cell. Thank you.
Behind the scenes, inside the action, on top of every moment, PBS NewsHour is your all-access pass to the 2012 political conventions. On air and online with interviews, streaming video, live updates, and analysis. Join NewsHour anchors Judy Woodruff and Gwen Ifill for up-to-the-minute coverage. PBS NewsHour, Convention Central 2012.
We had been called up for the first time. Wildfires were getting close to homes. At that moment, I got my first taste of just how important the Guard is.
Be there for your community at NationalGuard.com.
You are watching KAKM in Anchorage, KYUK in Bethel, KTOO in Juneau, and listening on KSKA Anchorage.
Good day. Charlie Huggins here, Republican Senate District E, and I've been proud to be the senator for the Valley for some period of time. I'm a retired Army colonel. My wife was a helicopter pilot when I met her. She now is a principal in Mat-Su. She and I raised 3 lovely kids in Mat-Su that graduated from high school. Each of them now are college graduate. Chad's a company commander at Fort Riley, Kansas, preparing to go to Afghanistan. Hallie, a West Point graduate, is preparing to go to Afghanistan. She just graduated from flight school, UH-60 Black Hawk. Cody, our youngest son, a West Point graduate, is going to Airborne and Ranger School en route to the 82nd Airborne Division, where I was a company commander once upon a time. The new part of the district that I represent is Wasilla proper and the Lakes area, and I'm proud to have them as new constituents.
In the Valley, it's very simple. We have to address growth. Roads, as you know, we got money for the Parks Highway, KGB, and Tudor is well on its way. But Palmer-Wasilla Highway must be addressed, Selden Extension, schools. With that growth came lots of students. So there are new schools to be built, which has been bonded. We just got to get on with that piece of it. Emergency services, we're making progress, but we have a lot of work to do. And I'm proud to be teaming up with the rest of our delegation to make that work. The rail spur. You and I know that that's a statewide project, but it's important for Mat-Su in addition and upgrading the port as we go forward. Statewide, so sitting a hydro is hugely important to us. In-state gas coming to Mat-Su, whether it goes to Valdez or not, we win in either. We have to take care of Fairbanks in that proposition. Finally, I say to you, we have a lot of work to do. I want to team with you, and I'd appreciate your vote on August 28th.
Now let's meet the Republican candidates in House District 9, and first we're going to Mark Ewing.
Well, hi, my name is Mark Ewing, and I've lived in the Valley for 42 years. I have three beautiful grandchildren here in Alaska and three sons. The main reason I'm running is I see Alaska is at a crossroads right now. It's important that we turn the dreams into a reality. Our only saving grace at this point is the All Alaska Gas Pipeline. If we don't make a move soon, we'll be dipping into the reserve funds by the year 2018, and I don't want to see that happen. I'm a former city councilman, former Mat-Su Borough Planning Commissioner, and Mat-Su Borough Assemblyman. And the reason I'm running for my grandkids and your kids and your grandkids.
Thank you, sir. Now we'll go to a one-minute opening statement from Lynn Gaddis.
Thank you. My name is Lynn Gaddis, and I'm a lifelong Alaskan. I grew up in Gulkana in Cordova. My husband, Rick, and I moved to the Valley 25 years ago to raise our family. We have two sons that are now adults. For years, I've worked in the aviation field in Dillingham, as well as Flying Tigers and Northern Air Cargo in Anchorage. We own businesses in farming, aviation, as well as commercial and residential rentals. I've been involved in the community on many levels, on boards. I currently serve on the Mat-Su Borough School Board. I'm running for District 9 to bring business expertise to Juneau. One of our highest costs is the price of energy. Our electricity bills and heating bills are large portions of our paychecks. The lack of affordable energy keeps many Alaska businesses standing on the sidelines.
Now we'll turn to our panel of journalists, starting with Jill Burke and her question for Mr. Ewing.
Okay, you recently have been promoting tax breaks in exchange for Alaska jobs, tax breaks for the oil industry. And I'd like to hear if you believe this is reasonable leverage, meaning if they need the tax breaks first before the jobs will follow, how can you really be assured that that tactic will work?
Well, listen, we are exporting, our biggest export from Alaska is wages from the North Slope. Less than 60% of those jobs are held by Alaskans. About $4.5 billion leaves the state every year by jet from Prudhoe Bay. My concept is to create a drilling school in cooperation with oil companies. A drilling school in Alaska, production school, maybe in the Valley, to educate Alaskans so the excuse that we don't have trained personnel here to take these positions is muted. We do have a lot of students, a lot of people that are even older that would like to get into the oil field and get into these operations that need training. And I think it's a great leveling tool. You give us jobs, 2,000 jobs, it's $2.5 billion. We'll give you $2 billion.
Thank you, Mr. Ewing. Now, Lynn Gaddis, you have a chance of 30 seconds to comment on his response.
My answer to the question is, I do think that if we lower the taxes, I think businesses look at tax incentives. And that particular incentive on lowering the taxes, I think certainly assures that business will participate. So I guess that's my answer.
Thank you very much. Dacia Eaton, your question, please.
This is for Ms. Gaddis. What are the top priorities in your district?
The top priorities are certainly lowering those heating bills and those electric bills. They are getting safe roads in our district, and they're creating Alaskan living wage jobs.
Okay. Mr. Ewing, would like to comment for 30 seconds?
I think that I agree, but I disagree that we need income, we need revenue. Alaska, if it doesn't create a revenue source, the natural gas pipeline, we're not going to have funding for these projects in the future. We're not going to have funding for the dam. So it's important to look ahead, not just 5 years, but 50 years down the road, and get the revenue flowing.
Thank you. Jill Burke.
My question is for Lynn Gaddis. You're a strong proponent of quality education and school choice. My question is, if elected, what will you do to make sure that these options and that level of excellence is available to all students statewide?
Well, I've gone on record supporting school choice, and that means charter schools, our neighborhood schools, and quite frankly, the voucher or scholarship system that others are talking about. I think that in our education system that we need to make that pivot. Quite frankly, doing the same thing, expecting different results, we need to stop. We need to look at a different way of doing business within our schools.
Mr. Ewing.
The best education you can get in Alaska is a homeschooled education. Of course, that's not possible for everybody. The voucher program, you have to look at the fact we have infrastructure. We have buildings, school buildings that were designed by state specs that we have to maintain. They have flat roofs. We're continually maintaining these buildings. The voucher program could not be balanced and fair. When you look at the cost of education being $15,000 per student and the average education per student being $7,500, we really need to look at the big picture. And can we afford the voucher program at the same level? And the answer is no.
Okay. Dacia Eaton.
This is for Mr. Ewing. What is your stance on the legalization of drugs, particularly marijuana? Is it time to legalize it?
To be honest with you, I don't think we need to go there. The federal government has laws in place. I don't think that's going to cure the problem. And so, no, I'm not for legalization at this point.
Ms. Gaddis.
Well, my response will be slightly different, that I think that alcohol is also a drug. So if we're going to allow alcohol to be legalized, I do not agree on legalizing drugs across the board. But there are pros and cons on legalizing marijuana, and I'm not steadfast against legalizing it based on the same thing that I'm saying is if we're going to keep liquor legal, then why not look at marijuana? So I'd be willing to look at it.
Okay. Now it's time for your moderator to ask a couple of questions. I'll start with Mr. Ewing. You'll have 30 seconds for an answer, and you'll have the same question. You'll have 30 seconds for an answer. Mr. Ewing, are benefits for state employees, the benefits state employees receive, too high, too low, or just about right?
Well, you know, that was all based on a hypothetical number that was miscalculated back in the day. And as a result, we're paying the price. These were unrealistic benefit calculations that were put on the table during negotiations, and we simply failed to miss the big picture again. And as a result, we are paying higher benefit costs than we expected for the retirees.
Thank you, sir. Ms. Gaddis.
And could you repeat the question, please?
Well, it was a question, essentially, are benefits for state employees just about right, too high, or too low?
I think that they're just about right. I think that we have some inefficiencies, and I think that the unions have not helped in being able to determine those inefficiencies. So the public sector unions, I think, need to get together, and we need to determine those inefficiencies and where we can make better use of our dollars.
Okay, this is for Ms. Gaddis, and then Mr. Ewing will have his opportunity. You referred earlier to alcohol and its role in our society. Is the state of Alaska and local governments regulating alcohol properly? Are there changes we need to make in the way we regulate and handle it and manage it?
Well, I don't think they're regulating it properly. I'm a proponent of less regulation, period. So when you said regulation, I kind of stumble on that. I don't know how much more we can do. There's certainly personal responsibility that needs to be taken in, and I'm not sure that regulation is truly the answer.
Mr. Ewing.
Well, I think there's some areas we could look at. To this date, we don't have a schooling program for people that work the doormen. And as a result, we've seen incidents in the past where the doorman has
in a bar or a nightclub
has went too far and caused damage to somebody because he wasn't educated. I think education is the key, and it's up to the bartender to determine whether or not that person can remain in a bar, and if not, that person needs to be removed, but in a manner that is proper.
Okay, now we're going to turn to the candidates, and it's their opportunity to ask one another questions. You'll have a brief opportunity to ask the question. The recipient of the question has 45 seconds to respond, and then the question asker gets another 15 seconds. So Ms. Gaddis, you go first, and your question is for Mr. Ewing.
And my question will be, Mark, can you please explain your illegal alien policy of shoot to kill?
Yes, I can. That was posted on a web on my Facebook page soon after the Border Patrol guard was shot. The Fast and Furious program set up by our government that's here to protect us. If you would read the post after that, it talks about maybe detaining illegals for 6 months, having them do hard labor 7 days a week, and then exporting them back to the country of origin. I think it's important that we seal our borders. I would rather see our troops at home protecting the U.S. than fighting a war for the Chinese over some copper mine, which is happening right now in Afghanistan.
Ms. Gaddis, 15 seconds.
Well, I guess, do you think that we have a border problem here in the state?
Your opportunity to answer, not ask another question.
Sorry.
We can continue this in another fashion here in a couple of minutes.
Okay.
Mr. Ewing, your opportunity to ask a question for Ms. Gaddis.
Yeah. Lynn, I wonder how you're going to be able to vote on issues pertaining to Point McKenzie when your husband has such a large financial, 1,560-acre ag lease out there that is proposed to possibly be the next Lake Hood. How you can legitimately represent District 9 and vote on issues regarding Point McKenzie when the financial interest seems to be very great?
I don't even know how to answer. It's news to me about the Lake Hood part, and I'll be sure to pass it on because Lake Hood is certainly filled up with float planes, and there is definitely a need. So I'll take that under consideration. How can I vote on issues? I won't have a problem voting on issues. I don't know about the Lake Hood things.
Mr. Ewing, a brief comment on the answer.
Yeah, well, it's definitely a conflict of interest. When you're such a large property owner with an ag lease that can only be changed by a legislative action. And I guess I kind of question your motives for running for office. And I also would wonder if District 9 will be suited by you having to recuse yourself from voting due to this financial interest.
Okay, Ms. Gaddis, your opportunity for a question?
Or respond?
We're now in the question format, so I'm sure you can turn an answer into a question
okay,
or a question into an answer.
Mr. Ewing, what makes you think that we have an ag lease?
Well,
in Point McKenzie.
Can I answer?
Sure.
It's either ag lease or property that you own. I know that you, there was just an easement sold to a utility, a private utility company, to cross that property at $40,000 or $50,000. Borough records indicate it's 1,562 acres, I believe, with a large lake, large home. What I see is a possibility for the Point McKenzie to become a viable area someday, and I wonder how you can distance yourself from any conflicts of interest.
Ms. Gass, 15 seconds.
Well, we have other properties throughout the borough too, and I'll be able to distance myself. You are misinformed on some of the areas, but you know, I'm not going to waste our time going through that. I have other properties, and we are invested in the state of Alaska. We're here to stay.
Mr. Ewing, your opportunity to ask a question.
Lynn, I guess the question I have for you is, you were 1 year into the school board, and you talked to the frontiersman and said, I'm halfway through my term. I don't know what kind of math they taught you in Cordova, but 1 year doesn't equate to halfway through a three-year term. Myself, I decided not to take the position that was given to me as director of the National Association of Republican
There's a question in there.
Commissioners, and the question I have for you is, what makes you think you're qualified?
Well, I'll start out with the school board is a three-year term. I'm 2 years into it, so you're correct. I'm more than halfway through it. That being said, and talking about math, I'm qualified as a citizen of District 9. I've been there for 25 plus years. I'm qualified to represent the rest of the people in District 9.
Mr. Ewing, 15 seconds if you wish to comment.
Again, this Frontiersman article was published on the 4th of last October. That's before you were even sworn into office. So again, I say, how can you at that point say I'm halfway through my term on the school board and I'm putting my name in for State House? So if I got the math correctly, incorrectly, then I guess I'm wrong, but the article was dated 10/4/11.
Ms. Gaddis, your opportunity to ask a question. You can keep up with the same subject.
Okay, we'll keep up with the same subject. Mark, that's the reason that you should not go to Juneau. I was sworn in on the school board, not in 2011, but in 2010. You need to do your homework if you're going to throw accusations.
Is there a question in there somewhere?
And I guess my question is, Mark, what makes you feel qualified to represent our district?
45 seconds, sir.
No problem. I've done a great job of carrying that torch of conservative common sense on the City Council and the Borough Planning Commission and the Borough Assembly. Many times single-handedly against a hostile council or assembly. But I believe that has earned me the qualifications to carry that torch to Juneau.
Ms. Gaddis, you have 15 seconds for a final thought.
Well, I guess my final thought is, you know, as we go yin and yang back and forth on what date and what newspaper, this is really getting into the weeds. I will say that the math that they taught in Cordova clearly is different than your math.
Let's go back to our reporters, our panelists of reporters, and give them an opportunity to question our guest, and we'll start with Jill Burke.
Okay, my question's for Lynn Gaddis. At the present time, oil prices of more than $100 a barrel are required to balance the budget. Prices fluctuate dramatically. We see that year after year. So how do we protect ourselves against fluctuation in oil prices moving on into the future?
Two ways, I think. One of the ways is stop spending as much. I was here when our oil prices were down in the single digit numbers. And I tell you, it's scary to think that we have such high fluctuations that we could go back there. But our budget will not be able to keep up. So we need to cut the inefficiencies in our budget. And the second way is to fill that pipeline.
30 seconds, Mr. Ewing.
Well, I was here before the oil line. I actually helped construct it. I think we need to have realistic expectations of the market value when we go into the budget. Right now, we're, again, like we did with the retirement plan, we're shooting for the highs. We're shooting for the best. We need to shoot for what could be the worst case scenario, the best, and somewhere in the middle.
Thank you.
I base it on that.
Let's turn back to Daisha Eaton and her question for Mr. Ewing.
What role, if any, should religion play in government, and where do you draw the line in the division of church and state?
I love that question. I believe that we need a division between church and state. I don't want to be taught the rules of Islam, and I don't think it's proper to teach the Ten Commandments. I think that should be done at the home. I'm saddened that you're allowed to take a Bible. It's encouraged to take a Bible into prison and read it, where it's discouraged to take one to school, and that bothers me. And with that being said, I think that there needs to be a separation, but I believe that once we open up the door for one religion, we have to open it up for all of them.
Ms. Gannis, 30 seconds.
Well, going hand in hand with my approving and wanting vouchers, I think that as far as church and state is involved in regards to the schools, I think parents get to make that choice. So should they send their kid to a private school where it's a parochial school, more power to them. Should they want to send it to a public school where they don't teach religion, again, the parent's choice. So the separation between church and state should be done that way, allowing the parents to choose, at least in the school system.
This will be Jill Burke's opportunity.
Okay, my question is for Mark Ewing. At a candidate forum recently in Wasilla, you were quoted as saying, "We are spending millions and millions and millions of dollars educating children that have a hard time making their wheelchair move, and I'm sorry, we have to say no somewhere. We need to educate our children, but there are certain individuals that are not going to benefit from an education." Now, this was in response to a budget question. This also drew a lot of criticism. I'd like you to explain your views on educating children with disabilities.
It's funny, I got a phone call right after that from a gentleman who, daughter is now 53 years old, who spent 12 years in the system. And he said, "Mark, she's still at the 6th year old mentality. They have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars trying to educate my daughter, and it just didn't work." My comment was supposed to be having a hard time making their wheelchair move. We have children in school that we are mandated to educate, and I think there needs to be a process in place where we can say, you know, maybe there's a different type of schooling that we need to put you through, because if your educational level is at the 6th grade level, do we really need to teach you 12th grade material?
Thank you. Let's go to Ms. Gaddis for 30 seconds.
And that is, I'm going back to my voucher program again. Parents will make the best choice. They'll make the best choice what works best for their kids, not the government. The government wasn't there when they were born, and I think parents know their kids best. They can make that best choice.
Okay, Daisha Eaton.
And this is a question for Ms. Gaddis. You base much of your campaign on being a self-made person. What would you do as a legislator to ensure opportunities for others to take this route?
45 seconds.
Well, I would look at certainly laws, rules, and regulations, and see where they get in the way, where the, you know, I'll tell you what comes to mind right now, and I think of business licenses. I'm not sure what they do for us, but as businesses, you need to get those licenses, you need to pay those fees. And I would look at the fees that businesses have to pay and the hurdles that folks have to jump through in order to be a business person.
Okay. Mr. Ewing, any thought here?
Well, to bring in one thing, you know, the CNBC ranked us 47th in the 50 states as the least friendliest to do business with. I think that I think they missed a mark. I believe that we do have a friendly business environment in some areas. I would encourage, this country was built on the ma-and-pa businesses and the small business entrepreneurship. And that's what made this country great. And that's what's going to keep this country great, is getting back to our roots. So I think that we need to less government restrictions on small business. We need to take a good look at DNR, EPA, and also at our own wonderful EPA.
DEC, is that what you're
DEC, looking? Yeah, the wonderful people at DEC.
I'm going to have to wrap you up there. Oil prices can fluctuate wildly. They are over $100 now. In the late 80s, they were down to $3 or $4. How do we protect ourselves in building a budget and financing our state with fluctuating oil prices? And this, we'll start with Mr. Ewing.
Well, you know, currently we have all of our eggs in the oil field, the oil basket. We need to diversify. We need a revenue stream that is not just in the oil basket, but how about in the oil and natural gas basket? We need to encourage natural gas development. We need to build this gas pipeline, and I'll tell you why. While they're looking for natural gas, guess what else they're going to find? They're going to find oil. And we want to find this oil and natural gas on state-owned land. If it's found on federal land, we only receive half the revenue. If we take it upon ourselves to build this pipeline, the oil companies have invested $70 billion in this state. And for us to say, hey, you got to put out another $30 million to do the gas line, I think it's unfair. I think it's time Alaska step up, put some skin in the game, build the pipeline, and encourage oil and gas development.
Thank you. Ms. Gaddis.
I'm certainly in agreement.
30 seconds.
I'm certainly in agreement with the natural gas pipeline, but I also think that we need to build infrastructure to get to our natural resources, be it the Kinnick Arm Bridge, be it to the rail extension, or roads to resources. So I do think that that's what we do to keep that fluctuation from really harming us.
Okay, we have time here for one more quick question. This is for Ms. Gaddis, start with you. Virtually every public opinion poll suggests the American people believe lobbyists have too much influence over their government. Is that true?
Well, lobbyists have not contacted me, but yeah, I believe, I like the rest of the polled folks, I believe that they do.
Thank you. Mr. Ewing.
You just have to look at all the people who've just gotten out of jail. Sorry to say, most of them were Republicans. And I think that trend needs to quit. My vote's not for sale, never has been, never will be. Thank
okay.
you.
Very good. Now we'll go to our closing statements of about 1 minute each. I have a little bit longer time, but we'll go to you first, Mr. Ewing, for a closing statement of a little bit over a minute.
First off, I want to make it clear, we need to partner with the oil companies, making a common goal. The All-Alaska Gas Pipeline is the future for our grandkids and our children. We need to think 50, 100 years down the road. Many people working on the North Slope are retiring right now, or new positions could be available if we open up natural gas development. And we need to fill those positions with Alaskans. Our biggest export, again, are wages in the back of somebody's pocket who's having a beer on his way out of town at the airport. And I think it's a crime. There's 6 schools in Texas that teach drilling and production. There are 3 in Louisiana. They have 1 in Ohio, for Christ's sake. We have none here. We're not educating our kids. There's a lot of kids that don't want to go to college. They need to have an opportunity to enjoy the Alaska that I grew up to love and have the economic privilege of doing it in such a way where they're not working for Walmart.
Thank you. Ms. Gaddis, you have a little bit more than a minute, please.
We Alaskans do not pay the state an income tax, and about 90% of our revenues comes through oil taxes and royalties. We absolutely must keep our pipeline filled to pay for the much-needed infrastructure and services that we use. Alaska is presently in a strategic location in the Arctic, and we have the resources, willingness, and creativity to make our state a key state in the country. One of my priorities are to improve our road systems, as well as paving the way for businesses in the valley. Another is to responsibly develop our natural resources for the benefit of Alaskans. I'll be that consistent conservative legislator that recognizes that the role of government and realizes that government doesn't make business, but either can pave the way or get out of the way. I'll be that independent thinker that goes to Juneau. My name is Lynn Gaddis. Vote for me on August 28th. For the primary, you can go to my website, lynngaddis.com. Thank you.
Thank you both candidates, and we'll now turn to the uncontested Democrat in House District 9.
Good evening. My name is Blake Merfeld, and I'm running to represent the people of Wasilla and its surrounding area in the Alaska State House from District 9, and I'm running as a Democrat. I was born and raised in the state. I'm a husband, a father, a North Slope worker, and a former small business owner. This state has given me a lot. I've received a top quality education. I've had the opportunity to start and build a successful business, and it's been a beautiful place to raise my family. The reason I'm running is, as my daughter grows up, I want her to have those same opportunities, and those opportunities start with a quality education. We've got to revitalize our educational system. We can start by lowering class sizes. We can start by working with teachers and not against them, and including parents in their child's education. Our graduates must be ready for the jobs of a 21st century global economy, and we got to make sure that those jobs are there. Another issue facing our district is infrastructure. We need representatives who will support smart investments in our community and spend our money wisely. As a construction worker, I'm familiar with the problems of our deteriorating roads and bridges. Fixing these will be a top priority of mine because these bridges go somewhere. They go to our homes, they go to our schools, and our places of work. They need to be fixed, and they need to be fixed now. They need to be fixed by Alaskan workers. I'm asking you for your vote in November. It's no small thing for me to ask for your vote. It's not something I take for granted because that's something we've seen too much of in the recent past. Our state was built through teamwork, and without it, we would not be where we are today. We've achieved great things together, and as Alaska continues to develop, we got to restore that spirit of cooperation. As your representative, I will work with all industries, all parties, and all individuals. And together, we can continue developing our state and fulfill the greater promise that it was founded upon. My name is Blake Merrifield, and I hope I can earn your vote. Thank you, and good night.
Hi, I'm Pam Ron. I'm a Democrat from District 10, and I'm running for the House of Representatives. I graduated from Minot State University with a degree in psychology and a minor in criminal justice. My husband is a retired welder. He just retired last March. We spent the last 5 years building a home out in the valley. We're there to stay. We have strong family ties there. We have 2 children and 5 grandchildren in the area. Something I would like to see here in Alaska is stronger financial support for the public school system. This would ease the tax burden on property taxes in our area. It also provides a good basis for our children for their futures. They want eventually to be able to get jobs in the area. It also eases the financial burden in the long run because if there's a poor educational system, then there's increased criminal activity, then you have increased need for law enforcement, court costs, and incarceration costs. I'd also like to see our energy resources continue to be developed. I would like to see a Hire Alaskans First program. I'm very, very pleased with the LNG, the liquid natural gas pipeline that's due to come down to Valdez that will help provide for economic development in our area, which also provides more job for our kids, our grandkids, and it increases the overall economy of our area. I'd like to see industrial development out at Point McKenzie. There's 15 acres out there that would work very well. There's room for a landing strip, there's access to water, which is economical transportation. Remember, Pam Ron, District 10, House of Representatives. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. Please tune in tomorrow night.